Welcome to the Each and Every Child podcast. I'm Claire O'Hara, the programme director. Each and Every Child is all about exploring different ways to speak about care and care experience in order to shift public understanding and to tackle stigma and discrimination. We have 8 evidence-based recommendations that have been tested to do this. This podcast series will focus on the voices of people with lived experience, how they use the framing recommendations, the impact of sharing their stories or experiences, and how organisations and workers can fully support people when they're sharing their stories. For more information about the Each and Every Child initiative, please see the show notes for each episode. Hi everybody and welcome to Each and Every Child podcast. This is our first podcast and what we're going to be talking about today is first and foremost, why do people share their stories and what are the challenges about sharing your stories and how can we make that a safer environment and an environment where we pass the power of your story back to you. Joining me today are two of my favourite humans from our Voices of Experience group. We have James Doherty and Rosanna Campbell. Would you just like to say, introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Rosanna. I am 23 years old and I'm from our Voices of Experience group.
Hi, James Doherty. Nice to meet you.
Okay guys, we're just going to dive straight into it, and first and foremost I was thinking it'd be really good for people to understand from your own perspective why you share your story, why do you share the experiences that you've had. James?
So, humanity's built in stories, so before we had social media or we recorded stuff in books then, stuff was passed in for your elders through stories, storytelling. So I think stories are massively important, and also when you speak to subjects like care, etc., the way we do, then it can foster hope as well in people who might feel as if they're in a hopeless situation, and that especially people experiencing care probably navigating that deep feeling of separation that it can elicit when you've been separated from your family or you're cut off your wider social connections like your friends and all that if you have to go into a care setting. So it can cut through that sense of separation as well, so that young people in experiencing care don't need to feel alone in the world. And I think that's why it's important to be able to tell your stories as somebody who's been care experienced, who's been through that journey, who's came out through the other side, who can speak back to young people and say, I know you might be feeling a particular way tonight, the now, but you're not alone with that, and it absolutely will get better. That there's always, where you are now, there's always a better place you can get to.
So it's actually, I love that, James. You shared your story to actually support people who are experiencing it, and to get that shared humanity and experience.
Yeah. Absolutely, because I know through my own experience when I was younger, experiencing care, there was no adults in my life speaking to the reality of what I was experiencing. So what I was getting out of people was opinion, and it wouldn't have really landed because people were giving me an opinion on an experience they never had, and my attitude as a wee boy was, what do you know? Which is the common theme with young people anyway, like, what do you know, you don't know what it's like to be me. But when somebody's been in that type of care experience, they might know what it's like or feel like you in that moment, but the experience of being there is cathartic to the individual who might be experiencing it, because it lets them know that there's a way past it, and that elicits hope. And where are we without hope in our stories?
Thanks, James. Rosie, what are the reasons that you've shared your story in lots of different platforms? Why do you do it?
One of the reasons that I share my story is because I don't want children and young people to be facing the same barriers that I faced when I was sharing my story. I think sharing your stories is really vital, especially when you come from a setting where we've come from, like the care systems. it used to be when I was younger, it used to be kind of like, oh, your care experience, you're over there in a corner. And I don't want that for this generation or for any to come. I've got younger siblings myself, and I wouldn't want them to face that. I think if your care experience, you should own it. And if you don't want to own it, that's okay as well. Personally, for me, the most vital thing about sharing my story is letting young people know that they're not alone. And saying, like, look, I am care experienced, this is what I face, but that's not going to define my future. I'm going to be who I'm going to be, and nobody's going to stop you.
And you've been very particular in what you do and how you support young people, and in particular using talking about the things that worked, the things that made a difference to you. And as somebody whose name says, I don't have lived experience, so to have that insight that you bring and tell us what's the stuff that works, because sometimes as professionals we think we're doing the right thing, and that's why your voice is so vital. How do you find working with young people? Because you do that, you work directly with young people who are care experienced to support them in advocating for a better way and the supports that they need. How does that make you feel?
I personally, I love it. I wouldn't change my job. I mean, working with care experienced young people on a daily basis is probably one of the best things that I've done. I mean, before I got the job that I'm in now, I used to volunteer, and that fulfilled my happiness, and that pointed me in the career that I wanted to go in. And I think if I can help impact a young person's life and help them change a policy and procedure that needs to be changed, and it should be changed, why are our young people going to back down and say, no, I'm just going to sit here and say, like, the system's fine if it's not? I think working with young people on a daily basis, it promotes them to be advocating what they're going through, which is a really positive thing, because, yeah, as a professional, you might not be getting it right, but if you sit down for 5 minutes and have a conversation with that young person, you're going to see a completely different side to them. The barriers are going to be broke down. They're not going to be sitting on the fence, on edge, being like, well, you're just a professional. You're listening to them. You're seeing what they want to do and what they want to change, and you're helping shape that and potentially bettering our future for our care system and our young people. And I think, yeah, it's a vital thing to be doing.
I'm very grateful for the work that you do with our young people, and I've been seeing you in action. Rosie, you've been quite a strong voice, and there have been lots of times when you've been asked to come into settings to share your own experiences. Has there been any times when you've felt that's not been a safe space, or you've come out the other side and it's not sat right with you?
Yeah, I mean, I've shared my story a good few times. Anyone that knows me knows that I've shared it a lot, and I'm quite vocal about that. I think a couple of years ago, maybe going back about 5-6 years ago, it wasn't safe for me to share my story, but at that time I didn't realise that. I think at that time I was still very anger-fueled. It wasn't coming from a place of positivity, it was coming from a place of, look, you've done this, you've hurt me, and you know what, I'm going to make sure everyone knows that. Now, as much as that was fine, I think there's ways I could have done it better. But for the people that were involved in helping me share my story, I think they should have realised, like, this young person's clearly going through something traumatic, and the way she's feeling right now isn't where she needs to be. And I guess that ties into why I do what I do now, because you need to feel safe in sharing your stories. You need to be able to share your stories in a positive way that's going to have a meaningful action behind it. And I think prior to recent years, it wasn't done in that way, which for me is not okay. I mean, we need to be sharing our stories so that our young people feel safe and they feel protected. Caused a lot of trouble growing up, the way I was sharing my stories, whether that was through my family or friends. A lot of people didn't know my background, and I went into this thinking, you know what, yeah, I'm going to show everyone exactly how it is, and no one's going to say anything to me about it. But that wasn't the reality of it. I think it was really hard to deal with, and I was left in the process to go home and deal with that trauma that I was already dealing with, because I just spoke about it. And I think even just a follow-up phone call to be like, you all right, Rosie, how you doing? Done a smashing job yesterday, but I bet it was tough. Like, that would have went a long way. I think now we're in a position where hopefully stories aren't being shared in the same way they were as myself a couple of years ago. And I hope that people are doing follow-ups with young people, and if they're sharing their story, they're doing it in a safe environment where they're respected, and they can speak about their story, and kind of that saying, what says in this room, like, stays. So, yeah.
So is it, James? I could feel you twitching beside me. How about you? What's your opinion of people sharing their stories and making it safe, and that idea of the potential to be traumatised? So it was dead interesting listening to you. I was just agreeing with everything that Rosie was saying, because when we share our stories for a place of woundedness, it can exacerbate the wound. And the thing about that is when you heal the wound or the trauma, which trauma is a wound, then you can look back and say, for a place of healing, when you look on something you shared for a place of woundedness, there might be regret because you did it in a setting where you didn't feel safe. Or even, for example, like I've always said, that not everybody deserves a front row seat at the detail of your life. And the reason that is because as you grow and heal, your story changes anyway. Mm-hmm. So when I was angry and hurt and I was projecting that pain towards the people who harmed me, when I started my own healing journey, I started to look on them more compassionately. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't have spoke to them the same way. But it's all relevant anyway, because that's part of the healing journey. Is you need to, even in the healing journey, you need to be allowed to metaphorically take a baseball bat to stuff, because some people harmed you. And I know meaning to them, I'm meaning because part of the healing process is ejecting unresolved hurt and anger. And if you do that in the wrong setting, then, and it's on the public domain, for example, so if you've shared that and there's a record of it and it's on YouTube, you might have regret, because it can be replayed. And plus, I've always been very conscious of protecting people as well. You need to protect people, because they might not be on their healing journey yet. For example, like my own experience with family, example, or the system, and realising that people harm people for a place of woundedness, mostly, not a place of wickedness. There's very few people that are innately wicked. So a lot of it comes to their own unresolved trauma. And if that's on the public domain, getting replayed all the time, then it could constantly be triggering shame in them. So a big part of me has been about protecting the people who I know that loved us, but at the same time didn't meet certain developmental needs or nurturing needs, and having that space of that it's possible that the people who harmed you loved you and they traumatised you at the same time. The two things can coexist. Mm-hmm. But at the time, when I was in the wounded part of myself, I wouldn't even have love in the equation. It was just been about what you done to me. Mm-hmm. And no even take into account what had maybe happened to them. What was their life experience? What was their environment like? What shaped their worldview? Why did they think it was okay to participate in a particular type of behaviour that might have harmed me? And I've learned in my own journey that I don't want to pass the harm back the way, mm-hmm. or even pass it forward. It's trying to create... So having a safe space for storytelling is about having the wisdom to know the difference, showing what you keep to yourself, what goes on in the public domain, and always, always trust your gut, because the people who are asking you to share the story, they kind of consult that part of your gut that you need to, in order to say, I don't really think I should say this anymore, because I might regret it further down the line. Or are you having autonomy over the content? Like, having a debrief, going back over it and saying, right, that needs to be taken out, or I'm not comfortable with that being on the public domain anymore, because I'm at a different stage in my life and I've realised that I've said something and it keeps getting played out, maybe in the family system, and it's causing stigma in my life or causing emotional harm in the family setting. Because you know what families are like, for example. So if you share something that happened in a family, then you could form relationships with them again, because that's what happens. And then somebody mentions, because this is a thing that's misunderstood. Resentment means to refill old anger. Mm-hmm. So if you're not responsible for resolving other people's resentments, but you can arouse bitterness in people with participating in a particular behaviour or whatever it is, then what happens is families can replay that. I was watching YouTube last week and you said blah 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 about my ma. And then you've got the brothers and the sisters saying, "Ah, you should never have said that. What gives you the right to say that?" And then it causes a rupture in the family system. And ultimately, as a care experienced person, we'll try to heal the family unit anyway, so we only want to pour more pain into the arena. That makes sense?
Absolutely. You've just... I'm going to pull out from that, from a learning for people who support people to share their stories, is we've actually got to be a care almost on a yearly basis to look at the materials that we use of people's stories and go back to them at least once a year and go, this is still on our system, and give that autonomy back. We need to let go of those personal stories and give people, because both of you do it a lot and you might even not remember. So actually the onus is on us who are supporting you to ensure that we are checking in every year, every couple of years, to go, this is still on our YouTube channel, this is still on our website, are you still comfortable with that? That's a really lovely message and learning.
It's also
for us.
It's also worth noting as well that if people wanted us to speak nicely about them, and this applies to us as well, then they should have treated us better. So it pulls people into a sense of responsibility as well when they realise that these people are telling their stories now, or in the future, they might be telling their stories. So the work you do, they know, will get pulled back the way further down the line. So it pulls people into that sense of responsibility on the type of relationship they're providing in the present. Because I would like to think when people are looking back at my life, they're saying things nice about me, and I'm not pouring my shortcomings back the way, even though I've got lots of them.
Not so sure about that, but I'll hear that. No, absolutely, James, of that responsibility that we have, and it takes us back to that relationship-based practice of, before you ask somebody to tell or share their story, you need to build that relationship so that they then know that they can trust that you will come back. And we can always edit, that's the thing, I'm like, we can always edit. Is there anything else that you want to add?
So you said about how, so I've listened to thousands of people's stories over the years, and especially people who have navigated adversity. And what I'm always struck by is they aren't just telling us about what happened that shouldn't have happened. They're telling us in that same story about what should have happened that didn't. And ultimately, I mean, I've listened to a lot of these people who are telling us this about the stuff that should have happened that did, the stuff that should have happened that didn't. They're talking about relationships and the importance of surrounding people with healthy relationships. And that's what I've found. That's the bit that was missing in my own healing journey and the thousands of stories I've listened to. It's people telling me that some enlightened leaders in services or mentors or social workers, whatever it was, provided a type of relationship that was otherwise missing in their life. And when you look at how young people orientate relationships, if you surround them with as many healthy relationships as possible, they can potentially orientate in a different way, because everything's a function of attachment. And if you leave young people to orientate by their own level of woundedness, then the outcomes are no good. That's what the research is telling us. But if you put in what's missing, and that's where the wisdom comes, it's having the wisdom to know the difference, i.e. this is what's missing in this person's life, we can provide that. And if you can provide that, then the outcomes are better.
Absolutely, James. Again, big smile. can't see me. Rosie, just before we finish up, have you got any final reflections just on what James was saying, what we've been discussing?
Yeah, I mean, I think since I've been Each and Every Child Initiative a while now, and that quote that we use, what should have happened, we should be talking about what should have happened. It's always really stuck with me, and I think, especially going into the career I'm in now, I use that a lot with my thinking and the way I speak to professionals, the way I deal with young people, and it has a really positive impact as well. And I think James has hit the nail on the head there as well. It helps you with your own self-healing as well. I tend to think about now the positives and what could have I used when I was younger, or what could my young people need now that's going to benefit them in the long run. So I think whether it's telling your story, whether it's wanting an action change, whether you want policy and procedure changed, always start with what should have happened that didn't happen. And I think if you start with that, you always have a more positive kind of audience coming back to you, and they're like, you know what, actually, see, if we did do that, then maybe we would get a bit further. And that's the reaction I've always had to it. So personally, for myself, I just wanted to thank James as well on that note, because it's really helped me progress in the past year in the career I'm in, and I know for a fact it's really helped my young people too. And even in my own healing journey, I've been through a fair bit, as we all have, but it's really helped me in the past year or so to be like, you know what, actually, don't use that fueled anger, Rosie. Use it in a positive way. What could have you used, and what support mechanism did you need in place right then to make it right? And I think if you start with that, you're on to a winner, aren't you?
Absolutely. Rosie, you've totally hit the nail on the head. And I think as people who work to support children, young people and families within the care system, sometimes somebody tells a story and you go, oh, but we provide that service. Maybe we do, but why are people not accessing it? And taking it right back to James, it's that relationship-based approach. So even if you think, well, we are providing that, well, how does that young person, how do they not access it? Because maybe our approach is wrong, maybe the service we're providing is good, but our approach and that trust and that relationship isn't there, and we really need to look at that.
I think the thing is as well, is obviously for each and every child as well, all locality offices, wherever it is that you're working with a child in care, you're not always going to get it right, and that's okay. But you take that 5 minutes to listen to that young person, maybe we will get it right within time. I mean, God, we've worked on some projects that we've had to tweak a million and one times, but that's fine, because not one shoe fits all, does it? So keep tweaking away at it and you'll get it right eventually.
Because all learning follows attachment. You learn that for people you like. So if a service is saying, we provide that service, then the next thing that you're missing should be, well, why are they not learning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Both of you, thank you so much for your generosity of spirit to share, and to share in a much wider scale. We are very privileged, each and every child, because we get this learning from you guys. We get this development of our knowledge and understanding. We get that every day, and it's so empowering to be able to share with other people the journey that you've taken us on. And I thank you, both of you, for that and the support that you continue to give, not just us, but across the board. We will continue to listen and learn from you both. I'm going to take us on to the kind of final thing that I wanted to explore with you, particularly if there's people listening who have been asked to share their story and aren't sure, or I've maybe done it and going, I'm not in a good place with this. What advice would you give to yourself? So the Rosie 4 or 5 years ago, the James when he started out talking, what advice would you give yourself in the journey that you've been on about how to prepare to share your story? Or what boundaries do you think that you could put up? Rosie, I'm going to come to you first.
That's a question and a half, Claire. I think for myself, the best advice I could give to me is, like, it's okay to share your story. Try and do it in a more positive way though, Rosie. Don't be doing it from a place of anger and hurt. Take a step back before you start speaking and actually, like, analyse the situation that's going on. Why are you sharing your story? Why are you doing it? And are these people that are wanting you to share your story, are they wanting you to share your story for you to do good, or is it just another platform for someone to look like they're doing good. I think a lot of the time I got wrapped up in that, oh, you want me to share your story, so you're gonna smash it, you're gonna do a good job. But in reality, maybe 9 times out of 10, it probably wasn't the best platform for me to be sharing my story. And I'm, as James said, still trying to build relationships up and come away from that. So for myself, it would be really look into how you're sharing your story. Are the people that are asking you to share your story, are they doing it in a safe manner for you to share it? And what platforms is it going on as well? Like, do a bit more deep diving into why you're sharing your story and where it's going and who's going to listen to it. And I think now I would share my story in a complete different perspective. And also think about, what is it that you want to share? I feel like a lot of the times when I was sharing my story, I went off on a tangent about things that probably shouldn't have been said, but you're in the moment, aren't you? So really, like, just look into it deeply within yourself about, is this really what you want to do? And if you're looking back on it in 5 years' time, is it still something you want the world to know? Because once it's out there and once it's public knowledge, that's it. It's out there for everyone to see and there's no going back from that. So that's probably the best advice I could give myself.
Thanks, Rosie. Big smile. I keep forgetting that she's talking. I see lots of nodding around the table as well. James, what advice would you give yourself?
Make sure everybody buys you.
Really strong.
Yeah, because not everybody values your story as much as you do. And the thing is, you never asked for your story. So if you had to go through all sorts of pain to arrive at your experience, and somebody, for example, who might be sharing the same platform as you, i.e. maybe an academic, who's went through a whole host of education to arrive at their experience, they get paid for it and you don't, then that's no fair, because I know what I would have rather went through. I'd have rather went through the academic experience to arrive at their knowledge base and insight than have to go through neglect and trauma and abuse and all the other arduous processes that I personally had to go through to arrive at my experience. And that's why I tell my story, because fundamentally it's about prevention. So I ultimately cut me off, I'll say, I want to prevent unnecessary childhood suffering. That's basically it, in a nutshell. So tell your story from a place of compassion, honesty. speak life for yourself as well. Don't undermine yourself, know your value. If they don't value your story, and by that meaning numeration, then cut and run. Don't go, because it's not to serve your best interests, it's usually to serve their agenda. And you are a person of worth, and that needs to be reflected back to you constantly and how people work with you. So don't let anybody use you.
James, you hit a really strong point. It's something at each and every child that we feel very strongly of. Effective and sustainable change is only going to happen when lived and learned experience come together.
Yeah.
And we need to be in a space where they are equally valued.
Yeah.
And that absolutely is. We treat everybody in the same way and give them the same space and respect of that experience, because we know each and every child, the knowledge and expertise that all of you have shared has really shaped and informed and changed, and it's been a huge privilege to learn. And there's a really amazing thing that you, James, have said about how we share our stories, and instead of talking about what didn't happen, why don't we talk about what should have happened? And we were working with young people at the weekend.
Yeah.
And that really resonated for them, and because we want change. We're only sharing our story because, as Rosie, you said, you don't want it to happen to other people. So we need to tell them what needs to be there. We need to go, this is what wasn't there and what would have made the difference. And I just want you to know how much that resonated with this next generation of young people who are much more vocal. And I also want to thank both of you, because their young people are standing on your shoulders, and they're standing on your shoulders and their voice is louder and their voice is safer and it is stronger because of what you've sacrificed and the challenges that you've faced. So I'd like to thank you both for today and for everything that you do. It's an absolute privilege to know both of you, and every day we are thankful for what you bring and the knowledge and expertise you share.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you.